Good morning. Today is Tuesday, November the 3rd, 304th day of the new year. Joining us this morning, noted CPA Bill McCauley.
Hey, Brian.
You survived the third quarter extensions.
We made it through the 2014 filing season.
Is that like a notch on the wall?
It's always anything. I think it's a measuring point, and so you can look and say, hey, that's done. Of course, then you start looking ahead going, well, I couldn't.
Guess what's coming around the corner,
We'll start it up again here in a couple months, but it's nice to have those done. And of course, then following that, you're busy trying to catch up on all the things you wanted to do when you were so busy doing all the extension work. So,
good. Well, everything comes around in due time, right?
Indeed.
Our quote this morning comes from Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah.
Anyone who conducts an argument by appealing to authority is not using his intelligence. He's just using his memory.
Nice.
So, with the tax year as we know it to exist, we've got, 8 weeks? Hate to bring this one up.
Yeah.
8 weeks before the end of the year.
Yes.
A lot of times when we get together early December, it's like, okay, well, if you started doing, so now we got a little bit more time to say, let's consider, let's reflect. What are some of the things that we should be doing? Let's start, I guess, initially as just taxpayers.
Sure.
What are some of the things we should be looking at now or considering now while we still have ample time?
Well, I think we need, it's a good time for evaluation. And I guess a good place to start is to think back to 2014, and were there any surprises in 2014, particularly when the tax filing came about? And if there were, are those circumstances likely to recur that caused those surprises, or is there going to be some other surprise? Because most of us prefer not to have a surprise when it comes to what our liability is. And sometimes it's unavoidable because of the volatility of a person's income stream or whatever the case might be.
Life.
Yeah. And so I think it's important right now to just kind of evaluate, hey, where am I? And of course, the best data points probably to compare against are last year, because we can, we have that historical perspective, and we can see what the consequences were. And so you kind of look and say, is my income about the same as last year? Oh, it's more. Okay. Well, what does that mean for me?
God's listening is what it means, buddy.
Well, you start thinking, okay, that's great when you're making the income. It's not so great when you're paying the taxes. So then you're starting to evaluate, are there things I should be doing because my income's up? Conversely, you could be looking at it and saying, are there things I shouldn't or should be doing because my income is down this year because it was unusually high the year before?
So income-based is the first area to look at and see where those ripples are?
Yeah, I think so, because it gives you kind of an idea. All right, the general idea is if I think my income's going to be higher this year, that probably means I have a heightened need to pay attention to what I can deduct in order to try to make sure that I don't have we operate, particularly the federal system, but it's true in California too, in a graduated tax rate structure. So as your income goes up, depending on whether you're single or married filing separately or married filing jointly, you move through these brackets either slowly or quickly or more quickly. And if you're going to trip into another bracket, it doesn't mean all your income's taxed in it, but it does mean those incremental dollars, those additional dollars, are going to be taxed at a higher rate. And that, so not only do you owe the tax, but you owe the tax at a higher rate. And that can feel punishing.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:19. We'll be back with more from Mr. McCauley.
You've never heard us before, because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas, because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us. Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's, what time is it? 8:24.
Well, it was.
It's kind of like a little Sesame Street thing.
It's something like that.
Yeah, look at your watch.
Yeah.
What does Big Bird say?
Yeah. Yeah. Where's the big hand?
Not the big turkey, the big bird, yes.
No, the big turkey's right here
yeah.
at this table.
Doing what we can.
Everybody can make their own judgment who I'm referring to.
Yeah, exactly. Bill, the first thing we were talking a little bit about what individual taxpayers should be looking at. I would think other than income wobbles up or down, mm-hmm. inheritance
that
could be a trigger thing, a one-time, not an income-based thing. Home sale, okay, if you moved, mm-hmm. okay, that could be something. Dependents, situation, you know, family size changing, whether you've expanded or contracted. Any of those, I mean, those seem like they're pretty obvious ones. Do those tend to be things that have complications associated with it that we ought to start addressing now?
Yeah, I think that the changes in circumstances, that's basically what you're identifying is, hey, there's changes in our circumstances. We have a new child, or we have one who's now on their own and independent. Woohoo! And those kinds of things can have an impact on your tax situation. Swings in other circumstances, such as having an inheritance, as you mentioned, might be a death in the family. All these, as an example, when a spouse dies, the surviving spouse, for the year of the death, they can file jointly, but then the following year, they're filing as a single person. So the year after the passing of the spouse, they're going to file single. Well, if you were used to filing a joint return, maybe your income hasn't changed that much, but all of a sudden you're single, well, your tax burden is going to go up, potentially, assuming that you're going to be accelerating through those graduated tax rates a little more quickly. The other thing that can happen is that, it depends on the composition of income, because maybe one spouse passes and now they no longer have Social Security and 85% of that Social Security was being taxed. So now actually the income is going to be a little lower. So there's a lot of moving parts that can have an impact on, when you do have a change in circumstances, you sell your house. Well, that in most cases, for most of us, if we're selling a house and we didn't use it for operating a business out of it, in general, if we're married and we meet the tests and we have less than $500,000 gain on our house, which most of us, are going to fall into that arena, we're not going to pay any tax on it. So a lot of times that doesn't have a big deal. But
what about the costs associated with the sales? Are any of those things that we should track also?
You should, yes. And so as an example, let's say you have a rental property and you decide to sell it during the year. Well, now that's a whole different deal.
That's a business. Exactly,
selling my principal residence. But yeah, you want to keep track of what those things are, particularly if there is some chance that a portion of the sale of your house could be taxable, you definitely want to keep track of those expenses that are incident to selling the property. And some of those things can be fixing up expenses that you would incur shortly before selling it, or those expenses that you incur within the sale transaction, such as escrow costs. Your commissions, and which would be obviously generally the biggest item in terms of selling expenses.
Hopefully.
Yeah, well, I mean, it.
Well, by the way, the plumbing has failed.
Well,
that's... Row.
That's not good. And, we all know that's the challenge with home ownership is, it's great to have a home that owns you. And sometimes, that it comes with a price, and sometimes we don't see it coming.
Steep price. So in those kinds of situations, you just keep everything and then throw it out at the end?
Yeah, you would keep that information, and you'd determine, okay, some of this stuff I really need to hang on to. Gee, I sold my house, there's no tax consequence. Probably you're not going to need to retain a bunch of the expenses that you incurred preparing to sell the house. It's that's no longer going to be germane once that transaction's done, and if there was no tax consequences associated with selling the house. If it's some other asset, again, like the rental property, that's a whole different deal. You really need to keep you're going to have to keep those records, and you're probably going to need to have them for 7 years.
You mentioned inheritance, death of a spouse.
Mm-hmm.
those types of things that change things significantly. How do you do that one? Or do you just keep everything and worry about it when it comes tax time?
Well, it depends. Some people like to have an idea about what their tax liability is going to be, and that's kind of an inexact science, because when you're forecasting, projecting a tax liability, you're looking at and making a set of assumptions that may or may not.
Legal costs. I mean, those are part of that. Do those tend to be tax deductible?
No, generally not. So
pick a friend on that case.
Well, I mean, let me clarify. Let's say that that you draft a trust for you and your wife. That's probably not going to be, most of that cost is probably not going to be tax deductible, except to the extent it relates to tax planning. Whereas if you have a spouse that dies and there's legal and other costs associated with administering the estate, there probably is another entity that's going to be taking on those costs, and those costs will generally be deductible at that level. So as with most things, when you ask a question here, you know, the answer often is it depends.
Maybe.
It depends.
Retail sales tax. Should we hold on to those figures? I know in the past it's kind of been a coin toss, and you get kind of a base level reference.
I would say in general, it probably isn't going to pay to try to track your own sales tax, but you never know.
Yeah, no kidding. KINS, even when I think I know, I never know. KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to talk shop this morning with Mr. McCauley. Bill, we talked in the first half of the show about the individual, private tax payer. Now let's move into business. It's probably a little bit more liquid because there's such a broad variety of situations. But I would think that the tax planning or tax actions this time of the year can have significant consequences and impacts during the next filing cycle.
Yeah, there's the importance for, particularly for businesses, the importance for doing some tax planning. It varies a little bit on a business by business basis, but the importance of doing that is trying to, generally you've got more options available to do tax planning before the close of your fiscal year than after. So if you're doing, and I know that seems obvious, but there still are some tax planning opportunities that are available after the year end. So that being said, it's one of those situations where you may want to say, hey, look, we'll just deal with the narrower band of options after year end when we think, we don't want to try to take advantage of some of these other things. One of the real challenges this year, and as with a lot of years, is that we don't have the tax extenders yet put into play. And I feel like a broken record because you begin to feel a bit like a political skeptic, because you think, why is it they can't get this stuff done and put these things to bed? Because they end up having to deal with them late in the year. And let's be clear about what I'm talking about. When there are a number of provisions of law that expired December 31, 2014, and they have not been extended yet. And they habitually are extended each year. So the interesting thing is, for 2014, if we go back a year, those extenders were enacted in late December, and they were in place for 8 or 9 days until the end of the year, or 10 days or 12 days or whatever it was. And then they expired.
Poof.
So we see that Congress and our elected officials they defer dealing with this stuff until the 11th hour, and then we have a little window where they're actually effective. Up until then, everybody's making assumptions that they may or may not be effective. And then we get to a new date, and then we wait another 11 and a half months for Congress to do something again. And well, I'm not saying...
At least there's a trend there, and there may be some now predictability after 3 or 4 years of this.
Here's the danger. Those are significant... Those provisions, those extender provisions, are significant tax provisions. They have consequences that can be far-reaching, and... they can be often some of the easier ways of affecting some tax planning. So when you're sitting there and you're going, gee, we're all the way here and we don't know yet, you begin to scratch your head and you think there's got to be a better way of doing business, because right now one of the main provisions we don't know about is what we call Section 179. And that's an expensing election that businesses make for purchases of equipment. Normally, if we buy an asset that has a life that's of more than a duration of more than a year, instead of writing it off right when we buy it, we have to depreciate it over a useful life of the asset. So you buy a computer and you depreciate it over 3 years. You buy a car, you depreciate it over 5 years. You buy a desk, you depreciate it over 7 years. There's actually tables for all this stuff. And that's the normal way this thing happens. Well, you can see the difference if you buy... a big truck for your business, and you spend $50,000 for this truck, you can see the difference if you're going to depreciate that over 5 years or if you're going to get write that whole $50,000 off this year. Makes a huge difference. Right now, we don't know what's going to happen with Section 179 again. We assume, and we have been assuming in prior years, that they will indeed extend it. But we don't know that.
Well, and if it is extended, what form does the extension written
in? Exactly. We just, this is in my mind really a stupid means of trying to affect tax policy. And so I don't really know where to go with it other than to say that we're waiting for this stuff.
Yeah, waiting for Godot. My question is, for the smaller purchases, does it impact?
Well, it doesn't for supplies and things like that. So, I mean, if you get to the end of you're getting near the end of your fiscal year, and you decide you're an accounting office, and you decide, hey, we're going to go out and we're going to buy some extra paper because we know in the first 2 or 3 months of 2016 we're going to use a bunch of paper. So you go out and order a pallet of paper. Well, that's no problem. That can be deducted when you pay for it on a cash basis. It gets more problematic if you buy more inventory than you would need logically in the next 12 months.
So you bought 10 pallets.
Yeah. Then there's potentially a problem because you're really not buying something that's going to be consumed within a year. But by the same token, we can't apply that same set of rules to equipment. And that's the challenge. We really need to be able to know what those rules are so that we can help our clients make decisions about, is this a good time to invest in a capital item or not, because of here's what the tax impact is going to be.
The 8 days of glory last year.
Yeah.
Those rules that were in effect, they then play out for the...
They were retroactive
life of those equipment items, that truck that you were talking mm-hmm. about. That's now in place for the 7 years rather than...
Well, what happened last year, as an example, is we were able to expense those trucks as opposed to have to capitalize them, depreciate them over 5 years. So in that case, if indeed that's what the taxpayer chose to do, that's been expensed. We're not going to depreciate it because we took the whole deduction in the year it was purchased.
So there was a choice.
There was a choice. Right now, we're assuming there's going to be a choice, but we don't know there's going to be a choice. So it becomes, and when clients are looking at us to help say, okay, well, this is what I think my income is going to be. What can I do to mitigate my tax liability? We say, well, we think you can buy some equipment. And we think, based on history, that you're going to be able to write it all off this year because you're a small business and there's these provisions that are there for small businesses. I'd rather advise clients not by saying, I think that's what the law is going to be. I'd like to be able to say, the law is going to be X, and here's what you can do.
Here's a couple
of ideas.
And
here's the concrete benefit that I know you're going to get if you do this.
KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:42. We'll be back with more from Bill McCauley.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Bill McCauley. Bill, the concept, I think, of the purchasing and trying to strategize that is one thing. Cash flow is one thing. Getting the order placed is a whole different ballgame. A couple years ago, we were talking about trucks, and it was to the 11th hour again. And the concept was, can the manufacturers deliver the product in a timely fashion so that they will be received
and placed in service
by a certain date? Now, I suppose with a truck, okay, that means you drive around the parking lot once it's in service.
Yeah.
Okay, so as long as you got it, you're okay.
Yeah, as long as you got it, you can use it. Right.
Other pieces of gear, particularly with the 31st, what is it? Oh, man, somebody didn't change the calendar on me. Hang on.
Yeah.
This was a great question.
Yeah.
Timing's a little weak now. Okay, with the 31st being on a Thursday and Christmas, you know, you're dealing with a 3 or 4 day delivery week after Christmas, after the holidays and the jam up.
Yeah.
And I would think by the middle of December, if it's not there, we're back in that same boat.
Well, think about your business. If you needed a transmitter, I don't know, you know, give me a piece of equipment, but let's say you need a transmitter. And what's the lead time that you have to order a specialized piece of equipment like that?
Yeah, some are on the shelf, some are custom designed.
And do you know that? Unless, you know, so you better be. So if you're thinking about, but you don't want to incur this cost unless you know you're going to be able to deduct it this year, you better be talking to that manufacturer saying, we'd like to order, we're waiting to see what Congress does. You know, can I order, you know, what's the last day I can order this and be sure I get it? And if it's a transmitter, placed in service becomes an interesting question, right? Because having it physically here is not enough. You got to be using it to
up on the hill.
Yeah. So all these things become really challenging for people to manage, and that's the frustration that we feel as consultants to try to say this is how you should make these decisions. It's really difficult. You know, most of us, and candidly, a lot of businesses make the decision, well, they've been renewing this piece, they've been extending it.
Let's roll the dice
we're going to make the assumption, and if they don't, then we'll deal with the consequences.
Well, if it's a $4,000 or $5,000 purchase,
it's different
than that $400,000 purchase.
Right. And there are generally overall caps on the amount that you can do. So it's one of those things that, this affects small businesses more than large businesses because they get dollar limited out. But the point being,
and we don't have staff guys telling us what we can do either.
Yeah, that's true too.
And that's when do you get the appointment? What's the lead time? All that kind of stuff.
And most of us don't have the option of moving our headquarters to Ireland because we want to change our tax situation.
Or Delaware or Florida or
yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, we're seeing a lot of these corporate ventures, you know, moving their headquarters offshore because the U.S. corporate tax rate's the highest in the world.
In addition to being squirrely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's a good thing to end the show with. Happy Thanksgiving. Squirrely.
not squirrel.
Join us tomorrow morning for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hugs from y'all. See you then.